Some interesting nitzivs. We'll start with the end of the parsha. At the time, we'll make our way back to the beginning. So, according to one day in the Gemara, Tosfos actually in Baba Basra, Kuf Yutes, the Mekoshes was Miskavi L'Shem Shemayim. Why would you be Mechal Shabbos L'Shem Shemayim? So, I'll discuss what's implicit in Tosfos and then what the nitziv adds. Not that much the nitziv adds, but puts it into context. Essentially, once they sinned and they received the harsh sentence of not entering Eretz Yisrael, in ways that were more severe and more shocking, almost apocalyptic than the Egel. And the Egel, it was excused, they were immature, they were fledgling people. Kadosh Baruch was willing to look past it. Okay, minor indiscretion, let's move on, beginning of our relationship. But now the harsh sentence came down. It was a real outcome, a real consequence. And the consequence was all those people would not enter the land of Israel. So there was a thought amongst the people that maybe the entire relationship now has been shattered. And now that we've lost Eretz Yisrael, now that we're condemned to die, maybe we're no longer obligated in mitzvahs. Maybe we're no longer obligated in general commandments. So the Mekoshesh wanted to demonstrate that even though there was this rupture in the relationship, you're still chayiv in mitzvahs, and there's consequences for Chilul Shabbos. Now, why would they think that they're pater for mitzvahs? And why does he demonstrate it with Shabbos? Well, they may have thought that they're pater for mitzvahs because of the Ramban. The Ramban says you only chayiv in mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. So they may have just said, we're not going to Eretz Yisrael anyway. If mitzvahs are only preparing us for entering Eretz Yisrael or preparing us in Chusar, so that when we return to Eretz Yisrael, we'll be familiar with mitzvahs. If we're going to die in the desert, we don't have to perform these exercises, these exhibition seasons. We're not going to be ever chayiv in mitzvahs in a real fashion. So we don't have to perform any mitzvahs, and therefore the Mekoshesh is trying to restore that sense of obligation. It could have been more psychological. It's not just about Eretz Yisrael. Very often, when people sin, and the guilt builds, why do a lot of people leave religion? As I tell you all the time, you know, you can't simplify it, you can't pin it down to one reason. But very often the guilt builds, and the guilt builds, and the guilt builds, and you just can't deal with the guilt. So you say, you know what? Your psychology starts to play tricks on you. Your mind starts to play tricks on you. You say, you know what? I'm unredeemable. I've sinned so much. I've reached such a low point. I'm so despicable. It's finished for me. And it's cathartic to release yourself from responsibilities. It's a narrative that helps you navigate through. It's hard to live with guilt. Part of life is to live with guilt in relationships and religion. To be able to live, guilt is a very healthy emotion. People try to avoid guilt in today's world in particular because too much guilt can lead to despair and too much guilt can lead to depression. But a healthy dosage of guilt is your conscience speaking to you. And your conscience speaking to you is a corrective. It keeps you in line. It keeps you in the morals and religious norms. So it's a nice narrative to tell yourself, you know what, I'll go to hell. You know, there's nothing stopping me. I may as well live it up in this world. I've already left the world of religion and left the world of commandments. So it's not clear from Tosfos which narrative they're saying. They're not chayiv in mitzvahs because they're not entering Eretz Yisrael and mitzvahs are no longer be as binding, or they're not chayiv in mitzvahs simply because they broke their relationship with Hashem and now they're out. Either way, he chooses Shabbos, which is a seminal mitzvah, to make a stand, to take one for the team, to fall on the sword, to be Mechal Shabbos, to demonstrate that we are still living a life of consequence, we're still living a life of obligation. And in the case of Shabbos in particular, not only are we still living under the specter of obligation, but we're still living in a bris, because Shabbos is a bris. And it's not just, okay, we've ruptured the bris, but now let's just go through the motion because we're obligated and God will punish us. But there's still a bris. And even when you insult the other person, that's what a covenant is. Even when you fight, even when there's an infidelity or disloyalty, you still have a bris. So he chooses Shabbos, doesn't choose tefillin, doesn't choose tzitzis, although tzitzis is the next parsha. He chooses Shabbos to make his stand. So that's all my explanation of Tosfos. I mean, the nitziv refers to it, but that's all implicit in Tosfos. Again, they thought they were discharged from mitzvahs because they weren't entering Eretz Yisrael. He chooses Chilul Shabbos, and he chooses to commit an avera just to demonstrate that they're still obligated. Is there havamina that they're not chayiv in mitzvahs because they'll never enter Eretz Yisrael? Or their havamina is simply because they broke the relationship? Either way, he chooses Shabbos because it's an important mitzvah, or he chooses Shabbos to demonstrate that the covenant is still alive and intact. What the Nitziv highlights is that he chooses Shabbos for a possible third reason. Not just because Shabbos is so seminal, but he chooses Shabbos, and the Nitziv points to Pesukim in Yecheskel, and this is what fascinates me, is that the Jews basically were Mechal Shabbos in the Midbar. It's a Pesuk in Yecheskel, he quotes, just somehow Shabbos was a mitzvah that just couldn't get right in the Midbar. And it's already seen in the beginning in Parshas Beshalach, where they just can't get it right. But according to the Nitziv, it's not just their training wheels, and once the training wheels are off at Har Sinai, then they succeed at Chilul Shabbos. They can't they can't get Shabbos right. So he doesn't just want to repair the ruptured relationship, but he's pleading with people, please, please, get Shabbos right. Please make a takana for Shabbos. And then Tim's proof for the fact they couldn't get Shabbos right is because the Torah says that they found him. What does it mean they found him? So according to the Nitzim, because they had Shabbos patrols, Shmir Shabbos in the desert was so weak that they actually had Shmir Shabbos patrols. People going around trying to get people to keep Shabbos. And those people saw the Mekoshesh, and according to the Tosafot, the Mekoshesh had proper Kavana, but either way, the Shabbos patrols caught him. Because else, how would they have caught him? It's a 3 million person strong machana who would be paying attention. The Shabbos patrols, they were paying attention. And he quotes a similar story in Nehemiah, where Nehemiah has to establish takanas for Shabbos because Shabbos is very weak. Now, what's interesting to me is, and I don't fully have my head wrapped around this, is it true that when we start a new chapter in our history, Shabbos is harder to perform than when we have a tradition and we're two or three generations in? Because you have here the Jewish people having a hard time, a difficulty keeping Shabbos. In Nehemiah, when the Jewish people return from Galus Bavel, they have a hard time keeping Shabbos. I know from my own grandfather's experiences that when the Jews moved to America and they were restarting Judaism and restarting their Masara, people had a hard time keeping Shabbos, now in part because America had a six-day work week. My grandfather moved from White Russia to the Frumma Shul in Baltimore. This was the Frumma Shul. By anyone's accounts, everyone there was Frum. There was the Torah Shul. He started a club in 1922 or 1923, and he handed out pins, and everyone who was in the club wore the pins, and there were three people in the club. You want to know what the club is called? The Shomer Shabbos Club. There were three people in the firmest city in America in 1923 who were able to keep Shabbos. So is Shabbos, there are certain mitzvahs that are yardsticks for the Jewish experience, and as we move along, for example, Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael. Shemitah has always been a litmus for how much we become entrenched in Eretz Yisrael. And for example, in the late 19th century, it was very hard to keep Shemitah. And as we're moving along the cycle, we're getting more entrenched in Eretz Yisrael, more established in Eretz Yisrael, we're just keeping more Shemitah, we're just moving along, and we're inching closer to Shemitah. So Shemitah is an index for Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. Is Shabbos an index for how much momentum we have in that current incarnation of a Jewish experience? In the desert, they didn't keep Shabbos according to the Nitzim, but they struggle with Shabbos. In Nehemiah's day, they obviously were having a difficult time with Shabbos. Nehemiah sees people performing business and trade and commerce. He has to make takanas. In America, is there something about when we restart our tradition, it's harder to keep Shabbos because Shabbos is something that's more deeply embedded in our psyche and our tradition. We don't see it performed. We have to restart it. It's interesting to me that Nitzim doesn't elaborate. So just to summarize the first Nitzim, he quotes a Tosfos in Bava Basra, Mekoshes was L'shem Shemayim. Why was he Mechal Shabbos L'shem Shemayim? To make a stand, to demonstrate that even though we're not entering Eretz Yisrael, we're still chayv in mitzvahs. Why were they thinking Pater mitzvahs? Possibly because they're not entering Eretz Yisrael, mitzvahs don't count outside of Eretz Yisrael, they thought. Or possibly because they thought they'd ruptured their relationship with Hashem, and therefore everything is lost, and they're unredeemed, they're in the dark zone, and they're no longer obligated. He chooses Shabbos in part because Shabbos reflects our relationship. And the Tziv says he chooses Shabbos in addition because Shabbos had widespread violation and he wanted to reinforce a mitzvah that Am Yisrael just wasn't getting right. The second Tziv I wanted to share with you was fascinating. They didn't know how to execute him. They knew he was Chayv Misa, but they didn't know what. What did they say? So we see this from moral lenses. This is a moment in which Moshe expresses humility. He doesn't just shoot from the hip. Let's put him into jail. Let's find out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But from the Nitziv standpoint, we are now seeing the mechanism and the phenomena of Torah Shebaal Peh. When there isn't something explicitly delivered to human beings at Har Sinai, and we have to learn it and intuit it, this is really Torah Shebaal Peh starting to unfold. And that's why the Torah stresses that they approach both Moshe and Aharon. Because why would they approach Moshe and Aharon? They should approach Moshe. In the case of the previous, the Pesach Sheni and Balos Rashi says they approach Moshe and Aharon because they're both in the Beis Medrash. But here it doesn't sound like they're in the Beis Medrash. So what does the Torah write? Why is it Moshe and Aharon? They're not in the Beis Medrash. So the Nitziv has a very, very famous, and he's got these panoramic global ideas that he develops in four or five different locations. But there are two ways to unfold the Masara when there isn't an explicit statement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem gives us explicit halacha, and then all this is our development, all the svarim you see here. So there are two ways. One is logic, one is exegesis. exegesis means you take the tools, the Yud Gimel Midos, Shatar and Dreshes for him, and you start applying Kal V'Chomer, Gzera Shava, Binyanav, you start taking the tools and you flex the system with the tools. That's called Svara. And then there's Pilpul Shatara. We start applying the tools. I'm sorry, I mixed it up. Svara is logic. The tools are Pilpul Shatara. Aaron was the exemplification of logic. Moshe was the exemplification of Pilpul Shatara. So they were trying to crack Torah Shabbat Peh to two different angles. We have no tradition. We have no Masara. What type of Misa you should receive? Let's ask Moshe if he can apply any of the tools, the methodologies of the already existing texts and tweak those texts with exegetical tools. The 13 Midos, there are many, many more Midos than the 13. These are just the 13 of Rabbi Shmuel. There are many more than 13. So there's an internal, systemic way to develop Torah. And then there is a logic that human beings can superimpose their own logic upon the Torah, as long as you understand the logical parameters of the Torah. Not human logic, but logic that you're able to build for seeing the overall system. And Moshe represented Pekulah Shatara, and Aaron represented Svara. And they were asking each of them for possible input, which reminds us that when we learn Torah, there are two ways that we study Torah, inside out and outside in. We are applying the tools of Gzera Shava and Mishonim, but also, does this make sense to you? Not you, Shana Aleph, but I was learning for a couple of months, but as best you can, does this make sense? What's the logic? What's the Svara? Yibayisema Svara, Yibayisema Kra. And you see certain Mishonim that were more textual to the Pula Shatara, and they were less willing to veer off into independent logic. And you see some Mishonim were more willing to establish independent logic, again, because they knew Shana so well, and to follow in the tradition of Aaron. So we're seeing now the first budding of Torah Shabbat. This is the first time, or one of the first times, that Har Sinai wasn't specific, and now the Rabbanim have to start interpreting, so they approach Moshe and Aaron. Moshe for his Pilpul Shel Torah, the skills that Hashem delivered in Har Sinai to further develop Torah, Aaron with human logic. Once someone came over to Rabbi Soloveitchik after a shir, and asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, what is the source of everything you said? So Rabbi Soloveitchik purportedly said, in his Litvish accent, a clear and logical mind. That's the source, a clear and logical mind. Now, you have to be Rabbi Soloveitchik to use purely a clear and logical mind, but even at the, it's a subtle, even when you're learning, sometimes you feel, okay, how can I apply the logic that I have in Torah and apply it to this riddle or this dilemma? And sometimes it's, well, what does the Rishon say? What does the Kal V'Chomer say? What does the Gzera Shava say? It has to be a mix between the two. Okay, have a good day, everyone. A little Moshe, a little Aaron.
You're welcome. I'm leaving tomorrow.
You're leaving tomorrow. So much luck. What time are you leaving?
The afternoon.
So let's try right after davening, okay? Okay. Come for the share, well, and stay for the talk.